Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Security situation in Brussels is we are not on a lockdown. Life has gone back to normal. However, there is increased police presence on the streets and a military presence as well.
That's reporter Esther Judah in Brussels with an update on security in the city after Tuesday's terrorist attacks. Details coming up also. Security ministers from Mali, Burkina Faso, Senegal and Ivory Coast meet in Abidjan to facilitate cooperation in the wake of terrorist attacks in their country. And no migrants reported today arriving on Greek islands. So stay tuned. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, following this week's terrorist attacks in Brussels, Belgium's Interior Minister Zan Zombon and Justice Minister Karen Gens both submitted their resignation today. However, the Prime Minister has refused to accept them. Tuesday's attacks on the airport and subway killed at least 31 people and injured more than 200. The Associated Press also reports that Belgian prosecutors say a suicide bomber that targeted the subway station had been hunted by police since December. That apparently confirms the link between November's attacks in Paris and Tuesday's attacks in Brussels. Also, Belgian media report today that a second person is suspected of taking part in the subway bombing. There are also reports today that Turkey had deported one of the suspected attackers, Ibrahim El Bakrawi, to the Netherlands last year, and that Turkey had also warned Belgium that he was a suspect. He was suspected foreign fighter. Prime Minister Charles Michel gave a speech today during a national day of mourning, saying the attacks targeted the liberty of daily life. He said, "Our country, our population were hit at its heart." Reporter Esther Judah is in Brussels and following developments. She gave VOA's Jody Capua an update on the ongoing investigation.
First of all, the Bakrawi brothers have been identified as the suicide attackers. One in the airport and second in Malbec station. They have now been identified. As in terms of the third suspect, he is still out on the loose and we have no further information as to what his latest movements are.
Now, I see some media reports say that a second person might have been involved in the subway bombing. Do you have any information on that?
Exactly. CCTV footage was released this morning. The CCTV footage showed one of the Bakrawi brothers who'd previously been identified and a second unidentified man. This second unidentified man is thought to have died in the attacks, yet not more is known on his identity.
What is the latest on the security situation in Brussels?
Security situation in Brussels is we are not on a lockdown. Life has gone back to normal. However, there is increased police presence on the streets and a military presence as well. In relation to the security situation, they are checking bags in the entrance to certain metro stops.
What about in the particular neighborhood where many of the Muslims have settled in Brussels? Have there been any security changes there?
I was down on the streets of Molenbeek earlier on this afternoon and also this morning and in the moments after the attack, and I was speaking to people on the streets who said that although maybe we couldn't see it quite so evidently, is that they felt the increased presence of Secret Service. This is a very small neighborhood down there in Molenbeek. It's very community-based, and they say, but, you know, we can feel it, we can see it, because they're the people on the streets that we don't recognize. Of course, there's a very visual presence of the security where we can see all over the city, not just in those neighborhoods, many armed police.
Now, have residents outside of that particular area been voicing their concerns about Muslims in that neighborhood? In other words, have there been criticisms among various citizens in Brussels over what's going on?
I have to say that in terms of finger-pointing towards specific communities is that we have not seen that. I was down at the vigil in Bourse, which is down in the center of town. Certainly last night there was a group of young Arab descent teenagers, Belge, of course, who were there, who were talking with, I would say, Francophone Belge. And there was a sense of we are communities together and together we are Belge. That at least is in the immediate aftermath. In terms of criticism and the structural weaknesses, of course, people's eyes will turn to these communities and how this has happened again. And also why these people coming from these neighborhoods are turning towards these more radical groups.
Have you sensed any fear that there might be more attacks?
Well, I have to say this is the second of such attacks, a very rapid succession from the first attacks in Paris, which was only 4 months ago. And with one still on the loose, there is a fear that this could be only the beginning. So, yes, certainly.
That's reporter Astrid Judah in Brussels. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. In related news, the lawyer for the prime suspect in November's Paris attacks say his client will not fight extradition to France. He says that Salah Abdeslam, who was arrested Friday in Brussels, wants to leave for France as quickly as possible. The multiple attacks in Paris killed 130 people. In the wake of the Brussels terror attacks, the two leading Republican presidential candidates suggested taking certain measures regarding Muslims in the U.S. Senator Ted Cruz said law enforcement should be empowered to patrol and secure Muslim neighborhoods before they become radicalized. Donald Trump said people from certain parts of the world, like Syria, should not be allowed into the U.S. without documentation. He also called for stronger border security. Nihad Awad is executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE. VOA senior Middle East reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi asked him for reaction to the candidates' comments.
We were shocked that a leading presidential candidate like Ted Cruz, who has a very good knowledge about the Constitution and American history, to suggest an unconstitutional and un-American and unproductive policy just to secure more votes and to appeal to some voters. And we hope and ask that all Americans will condemn this mindset and will condemn this suggestion. And I hope that also among the Republican leadership that they will denounce him, because this is very destructive. And it sends a very divisive message, not only to Muslim Americans, but also to the rest of America. This country has been built on religious liberties, and to target an American community just because of its religious beliefs is unlawful and unconstitutional.
But also Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump renewed his intention to close up U.S. borders and prevent Muslims from entering to avoid terrorist attacks.
We have condemned Donald Trump's statement from the beginning. And I think many people agree with us. The majority of Americans, almost 59%, rejected Donald Trump's proposal to shut down Muslim immigration to the United States because they know it is also unconstitutional. But again, he is just appealing to the feeling of the angry base. And instead of showing leadership by producing a positive and productive vision, he's exploiting the fear. And that is not leadership. That is opportunism, and it is they're lacking the temperament to be president. And I hope that more Americans will see that, because American Muslims are growing worried about their future under these kind of policies, and because it will change America forever.
New York City Police Department used to spy on mosques and Muslim community centers, but never generated a single lead to a terrorist plot. What is the most effective model for cooperation with the American Muslim community to combat any security threat?
Well, partnership, communication, trust, leveraging our diversity and respecting the law. It has worked, and other means were counterproductive, waste of time, divisive, and it shows the lack of leadership. New York Police Department was sued, and now they realize that they have not produced any lead or any significant information that will lead to the prosecution or conviction of any criminal. The Muslim community is an American community. And Muslim community should not suffer like the rest of those minorities. We are living in the 2016 year. It's like 21st century. We should have learned something from persecuting so many minorities. And the Muslim community is an asset to America, not only to build its economy and build its future, but also to communicate effectively and produce better foreign policy towards the Muslim world. They should not be alienated. They should not be blacklisted. They should be enlisted in the war on poverty, on illiteracy, and extremism.
Nihad Awad is Executive Director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. Security ministers from Mali, Burkina Faso, Senegal, and Ivory Coast ended a two-day meeting today in Abidjan on better cooperation in the wake of terrorist attacks in three of the countries. Emilia Ayoub reports from Abidjan.
The four security ministers agreed to combine efforts, share intelligence, and implement a common response to terrorism among the national services, as well as standardized legislation for better border controls. Ivorian Minister of Interior and Security Ahmed Bakayoko said the countries collaborated before but want to work together more closely after the recent terrorist attack in Mali, Burkina Faso and Ivory Coast.
C'est vrai que nous réduisions tous ces attentats, maintenant nous sommes au cœur de l'attentat, donc la posture n'est pas.
He says we were all fearing these attacks and now we are in the heart of it. So our situation has changed. That's why we want to go further in our strategy of global response to a global threat. The ministers also agreed to push West African countries to implement a biometric identity card system to better track people within the region.
Il ne pas se dire que on est suffisamment préparé, il n'y aura plus de problème.
Malian Minister of Security Salif Traoré said that we should not think we are well enough prepared and that there will be no more problem. There will always be challenges, but we need to learn lessons of what has been happening. Jihadist group Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb claim responsibility for several recent attacks. Senegalese Minister of Interior Abdoulaye Diallo, whose country hasn't been attacked, says he takes the threat very seriously. We are going to go very, very fast in implementing these measures, he said, because the threat is becoming clear. The ministers have also agreed to raise public awareness on being vigilant and cooperating with security services to anticipate and monitor religious radicalism. Emilia for VOA News in Abidjan.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Following this week's terrorist attacks in Brussels, Belgium's Interior Minister and Justice Minister both submitted their resignations today. And security ministers from Mali, Burkina Faso, Senegal, and Ivory Coast meet in Abidjan to facilitate cooperation in the wake of terrorist attacks in their country. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Greece says for the first time since the European Union and Turkey signed the deal to limit the flow of refugees, no migrants have arrived on the Greek islands in the Aegean. The EU and Turkey signed an agreement last Friday that calls for migrants and refugees who land on the islands to be sent back to Turkey. But the flow did not stop immediately. The French news agency reports over 1,600 migrants and refugees arrived on the islands Monday. However, that fell to 600 yesterday. Deportations from Greek islands back to Turkey are expected to begin April 4th. More than 1 million migrants and refugees arrived in Europe last year, most of them Syrian, and the majority used the Aegean route from Turkey to Greece. There is concern that closing the Aegean route will result in more crossings from North Africa to Italy. France's defense minister warns there are hundreds of thousands of migrants in Libya hoping to cross the Mediterranean. That was one of the preferred routes to Europe for migrants and refugees. The tens of thousands of migrants and refugees who had crossed the Aegean Sea found temporary relief at Better Days for Moria, an all-volunteer-run transit camp adjacent to an official EU registration facility. Since October, volunteers from nearly two dozen countries built and maintained the infrastructure that provided dry clothes, hot meals, medical help, and a place to sleep for the migrants. However, this month, officials began shutting down the facility due to the new agreement between Europe and Turkey, requiring migrants to apply for refugee status abroad. Earlier this year, VOA's Adam Phillips spent time at Better Days for Moria. He asked volunteers about the camp that was once a humble olive grove.
Inside, an immaculately maintained trailer behind the tea tent and halfway between the warehouse tents and the portable toilets, volunteer Yoram Weston, a tall, red-bearded volunteer, finished cleaning his tools and took a deep breath. He organized a team of fellow volunteers from the world of Dutch rock music festivals to build and maintain Better Days for Moria's infrastructure. He said that creating a weekend rock festival in a meadow and building a functioning migrants camp in an olive grove share key similarities.
To be able to put something down like this, you have to arrange everything yourself. If you want running water, you have to make running water. If you want to have a place where you can sleep, you have to make sure you build a tent. And this way, in a short time, you build a lot of infrastructure that can function on its own.
In a matter of weeks, Weston and his crew built an electrified medical clinic, a clothing distribution center, an information tent, a kitchen and dining hall, and other structures. Now they were preparing the ground for 50 tents, enough for 100 families.
We're getting the rocks out, we're putting gravel down so to flatten the space a bit. So today I needed to order the gravel, I needed to instruct the refugees and the volunteers that are helping us. They're helping us really, really well. We are improving the electrical system by putting in new lines and new lights.
When a UN refugee agency bus arrived at Moria, Alyssa Pemberton was often the one to meet the new arrivals and tell them where to get dry clothing, a hot meal, and some rest. If they were families from Syria or Iraq, there may have been space for them in the official Moria compound run by NGOs and the UN. But single men from North Africa, Pakistan or Afghanistan had to stay at the Better Days for Moria camp outside the official perimeter. Keeping these groups separate was just one of Pemberton's many, many concerns.
Certain nationalities just clash and they won't go together. So I'm also trying to think of nationalities. And then I'm also trying to think about how much blankets we have and storage and sleeping bags and where the spare tents are and if we have enough people in clothing distribution. And then if they're going to be hungry, and I want to make sure to let the soup tent know that we have a new bus coming in and they're going to be coming in and wanting soup. Oh, but then if there's, you know, 15 people sleeping in the soup tent because there's no places to sleep, then we have to wake them up and get them out.
Creating a stable infrastructure and registration system was made far more difficult by the fact that the migrants themselves often arrive traumatized and exhausted. Volunteer Marina Hickman, who brought her children with her from the UK, explained.
They come very confused. They have no idea where they're supposed to be, what line they're supposed to be in, what the procedure is. They don't even know really that they've hit an island and not mainland Greece. A lot of the time they think that they're actually on mainland Europe. So it is a case of trying to give as much information to them as possible. A lot of the time they don't speak English either, so obviously that causes other issues, trying to actually communicate with them and for them to understand how it works and what they need to do.
Shehrazad Shimarani, or Shah, is a British citizen born in Iran.
And what I try to do is help protect people, give them security and safety.
Translating instructions into Farsi was only one of her many volunteer roles at both Better Days for Moria and the official Moria transit camp, where the UN Refugee Agency, various NGOs, and tents for Syrian and Iraqi families were stationed. Here's how the system was supposed to work. Migrants were put in lines by nationality, given numbers by Greek police that would enable them to register in order, and receive temporary visas permitting them to travel into Europe
and apply for refugee status. Shah said this could be a 3 to 5 day process and that she'd like to act as a bridge between migrants and officials.
Information is aid, basically. When they arrive, we need to inform them of all of the facilities. This is what you're doing. This is where you need to go. You can't register at the moment. You need to be here for a few days, but this is where you can sleep. This is where you can eat. This is where the toilets are. Once they know what's happening, they're happy to just, you know, comply because they know you're trying to be fair.
Shah also fostered communication between the police and the UNHCR. Recently, the UNHCR had begun stamping the back of people's numbered tickets after they'd been given blankets. Shah thought this was a way to make sure migrants didn't return requesting a second or a third blanket. But no one at UNHCR told the police about the new system.
I had people's tickets ripped yesterday. The police officers saw the stamps at the back of the tickets and they thought they were fake. So I had to communicate to them, these people that you're ripping their tickets and telling them to go back, get new tickets. You're making them stay there for 3 extra days, but they're actually real tickets. So then I had to tell the police officers, look, this is the issue. Please don't rip them. They are real tickets.
When Shah spoke to me in January, communication between Moria's many elements were already improving. Newly donated walkie-talkies facilitated dialogue in real time, and the internet connection at Better Days for Moria's information tent was strong, allowing a link to the outside world through the camp's website and Facebook page. All this infrastructure is now moot as the recent agreement between the European Union and Turkey goes into effect. Other than the medical tent, Better Days for Moria is being dismantled. The NGOs have left the official inside perimeter, and the building that housed Syrian families is now a detention center surrounded by razor wire. Adam Phillips, VOA News, on Lesbos, Greece.
Today is World TB Day. Tuberculosis is now the leading infectious disease killer, claiming 1.5 million lives every year. That's despite the fact that it is a curable disease. The UN Special Envoy on TB, Dr. Eric Gusby, says the disease mostly strikes the poor. He warns TB is increasingly becoming a global health security threat. Dr. Gusby says while greater resources are needed, current resources must be used more effectively. He's also calling for greater research into new drugs and vaccines, as well as new testing procedures. The UN goal is to end tuberculosis by 2030. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And please stay tuned for the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Health Chat. Host Lenore Modou talks about tuberculosis. Is it making a comeback? What are the current treatments available? For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Can't get enough of the Sunny Side of Sports? Well, we've solved that problem. We now have a half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. So visit voanews.com for more details and enjoy the show. And enjoy the